Ramsey TV.
Do you know what the first words from the first guy who comes out of the lake of fire, which is the second death at the end of Eon 5, do you know what his first words are going to be? You mark my words today. Mark my words right now. Because when this happens, you're all going to look at me and say, how did you know? The first words of the first guy to come out of the lake of fire, which is the second death, at the end of Eon 5, are going to be, he's going to sidle up to one of us. And he's going to say, hey, dude, my name wasn't written in the book of life, and God said he was going to cast me in the lake of fire, which is the second death, but I guess he changed his mind. And the answer to that person will be, sir, you've been dead for 10,000 years. This is Martin Zender from the edge of the bottom of everything on another edition of MZTV. Don't know how it happens, but it happens every time. Don't know if it's going to happen today. It seems to be happening so far. I'm pleased with the way things are going so far in this show. Before I get into details on the Lake of Fire, which is literal, by the way, and the second death, which is also literal, and the words of the first man to emerge from the Lake of Fire, second death, which will also be literal, as you shall see, I want to follow up on yesterday's show by telling you a little bit about David Cassidy. David Cassidy, of course, I thought of him yesterday after I mentioned The Partridge Family, popular 70s television show, Shirley Jones, David Cassidy. That's the show that came before The Brady Bunch. Brady Bunch started at 8 o'clock, I'm pretty sure, on Friday night, Partridge Family, 7:30. Friday night was the best night. School was over for the weekend, and these two great shows were on. And I watched them religiously. Well, David Cassidy, a teenage pop idol. I mean, he actually sang in the Partridge Family. It was a made-up band, of course. But he actually sang, and he was a pop star in his own right. Traveled around the country while he was doing the Partridge Family, and he lived in Fort Lauderdale in his later years. He died in Fort Lauderdale, I think, 2 years ago. Might have even been last year. Well, I used to go once in a while. I'd stop in at the cigar bar on Las Olas Boulevard, the Maccabi Cigar Bar on Las Olas Boulevard. And I remember being in there one day, and there was a guy sitting in there's a long bar, and he was sitting at the end of the bar by himself. I didn't pay much attention to him. But then the next time I went there, the bartenders looked at each other and they said, should we tell this guy who comes in every day? Oh yeah, let's tell him. And they told me that David Cassidy came in to the Maccabi Cigar Bar every day. He, at that time, was an alcoholic. And I'll put pictures of him here. You would have never recognized him as the teen pop idol of the 70s. Really ravaged by alcoholism. And apparently, he couldn't drive anymore, lost his license because of DUIs. And so he lived downtown. And he would walk up Las Olas Boulevard, the same street I run up and down every day, and he would walk to the Maccabi Cigar Bar. According to the gentleman there, he would take that seat at the end of the bar and have some white wine, probably lots of white wine, and then walk back to his apartment. So I sat next to David Cassidy. I didn't even know it. See, I didn't know it while it was happening. I found out later that he came there every day around 2 o'clock. I could have gone back at that time and talked to him. I was thinking about doing that and giving him a copy of my book, but I just don't like to bother these people. These people either used to be celebrities. I don't have the heart to bother them. So I didn't do it, and he died like a year and a half after that. But what an example of life taking its toll on you. You're at the top of the world, and then you get that shot that I talked about yesterday. Not a shot of whiskey, no. The shot across the bow that life takes on your hull and threatens to sink you, sends you to the bottom of the ocean. And yet we, members of the body of Christ, we survive. Oh, think of that term as well. In 1 Thessalonians 4, we who are surviving to the presence of the Lord. Sometimes that's as good as it gets. Are you surviving? Congratulations. Christ is coming for we who are surviving to the coming of the Lord. That's how Paul puts it. I'm quoting it. We who are surviving. And I know the common use of the term is just the fact that you're alive. Yeah, but Paul doesn't say anything more than that, does he? Those who are surviving. The fact that you're surviving, that's something. Don't sell yourself short. You're doing an amazing thing to be surviving. So this man who comes, this hypothetical man who comes out of the lake of fire. Let me just give you, I've spoken on the lake of fire many times. I absolutely hate the false teaching that the lake of fire is figurative and that it's a reform school for people whose names are not written in the book of life. And they go to the, quote, lake of fire, unquote, which is called the second death in Revelation 2014. But these people don't like the thought that it's death because they know that a lot of their loved ones, perhaps maybe some of their loved ones, maybe one or two, will be there because their names are not written in the book of life. And so they try to make the second death a second mortality, a place where people go to learn more about Jesus, to be refined, and to learn more about God. And I hate this because it is a glorification of death. Death is an enemy. Paul calls it that. He said the last enemy is being abolished, death. 1 Corinthians 15:26. And so anyone who tries to make the second death a second mortality and a wonderful place to learn more about Jesus and to be refined, to be purged, to be tried, and to come out shiny and new. No, that's a glorification of death. Death does not do that, ever. It doesn't do it literally. It doesn't do it figuratively. Even the figuratively dead don't know anything. The prodigal son who went away, this my son was dead. Remember the father said after the son returned, this my son was dead. He was dead? Really? Literally? I just read he was hanging out with prostitutes and eating from the pigsty. Oh, well, no, he wasn't literally dead. He was figuratively dead. But even while he was figuratively dead, he wasn't learning anything about God. He wasn't progressing at all. So even death, when used figuratively, is no kind of illumination whatsoever. So the lake of fire is the second death. As I've told you many times, it's a metaphor. A metaphor consists of two nouns on either side of the verb to be. This is the lake of fire, the second death. This is the lake of fire, the second death. That's a metaphor. You'll find that in Revelation 20:14. In a metaphor, rule of language consists of two nouns and a verb to be. As a rule that's never violated, in a metaphor, the nouns on either side of that verb to be are always literal because you need to know what we're comparing. You need to know it's the figurative part of a metaphor is the is. See, the lake of fire is not death. A lake of fire is a lake of fire, and death is death. But it's the lake of fire is the second death. It's called that in a metaphor because it causes the death. The lake of fire causes the death, and so it is said to be death. But it's not literally death. It's a metaphor. And I can prove in linguistic ways why it's a metaphor. It has to do with the pronoun, but I don't want to get into that now because that's not my intention. I've gotten into that before. But know this, people laugh at me for this, laugh it up. Not you, none of you would do this. Some people do though. They say, Martin Center actually thinks the lake of fire is literal. What a stupid literalist. It is literal because it's a noun on one side of a metaphor. The nouns are always literal. Let me give you an example from Isaiah. All flesh is grass. All flesh is grass. Well, we know that flesh isn't grass, but that verse says that flesh is grass. That's right. It's a metaphor. It would be much easier if we said flesh is like grass. That would be a simile. Everybody understands similes. Flesh is kind of like grass. Oh, really? What do you mean? Well, you know, It passes away. It's transient. It's here today, gone tomorrow. Oh, yeah, I see. That's very sweet. Very nice. But a metaphor. People lose their minds. A metaphor is just a more direct way to say it, but it's still not literal. Instead of saying flesh is a lot like grass, the metaphor is stronger. It says all flesh is grass. What a new revelation. Flesh is grass. It's a metaphor. You notice the construction? Two nouns on either side of the verb to be. Flesh and grass. You have to know what literal flesh is, and you have to know what literal grass is in order to understand how flesh is like grass. See, flesh is like your skin and everybody dies. Grass also dies during the winter. So maybe there's a correlation here between flesh and grass. Well, obviously there's a correlation between flesh and grass. And the correlation is both perish. They're here today, gone tomorrow. So, but you have to know what flesh is. You have to know what grass is. So both nouns are literal. The figurative part is the is. The is not true. The is part of metaphor is not true. So the lake of fire isn't the second death, because a lake of fire is a lake of fire and death is death. But it's said to be the second death because it causes the second death. And what is death? I'm glad you asked. It's a horrifying answer. I hate to give it to you, but death is the absence of life. Those who are cast into the lake of fire, which is called the second death, they die. The fire is literal. The death is literal. Those who tell you that the second death is figurative, they don't understand metaphoric construction, and neither do they understand the meaning of death. That even when used figuratively, death is oblivion. The only difference is, in figurative death, the oblivious people are breathing. Yes, just like the prodigal son, he was figuratively dead. He was still breathing, but he was like, he didn't know anything. He was doing stupid things. Spending his father's livelihood on prostitutes, rich food, probably wine. He should have been, I don't know what he should have been doing. He should have been more, productively employed. But I take that back, because he needed to experience that. Do you notice that because he sinned, this is a whole other topic, why am I doing this? Because he sinned and returned, he's better off for having sinned and returned, because now he understands more of the Father's love. Now he understands what it is to have lost, and now he appreciates being back. And his Father throws a party for him. Never would have thrown a party for him otherwise. This is why heaven rejoices when one sinner repents. And I'm going to tell you this, and this is going to sound, it's going to sound perfectly normal to you. It's better to have sinned. Don't take me the wrong way. I'm going to back myself up in a second. It's better to have sinned and been redeemed than never to have sinned at all. But all have sinned and are wanting of the glory of God. Is that Romans 3:21? I'll find it. Something like that. All have sinned and are wanting of the glory of God. So, and the prodigal son mirrors this whole thing. It's better to have been lost. This guy got the richer experience than the brother who stayed home, didn't do anything wrong, had that even level walk. He's always doing the right thing. His father's always proud of him. That's a good boy. That's a good boy. But when the prodigal comes back, his brother comes back, and his father kills the fatted calf, throws a big party for him, the brother is livid. His brother is jealous. You never killed the fatted calf for me. What's up? And the guy says, everything I have is yours, but this your brother was lost. He was dead, figuratively dead, and now he's found. And so heaven rejoices, Jesus said, when one sinner repents. All sinners eventually repent, because all have sinned and are wanting of the glory of God. All are eventually saved, 1 Timothy 4:10. So they all must come to this point. And the prodigal son is a sample. It's a template for all the other sinners. We all go our own way. No one is righteous, no, not one. No one is seeking God. And then something happens. That goes back to yesterday's show. How did that happen? Wow, that was pretty cool. Something happens. A trauma, a trial that brings you to your senses. And of course, it's all God's doing. And you come back and God says, welcome. And you feel so much better than if you had just stayed and lived the even life. None of us are going to live the even life. How I long. I strain every day to live the even life. Can anyone tell me why? 30 minutes ago, I ate an entire bag of Tostitos blue corn chips. Can anybody tell me why? I was doing so well today. I went to the gym at 5 o'clock, did my weights, did my interval training upstairs, swam a quarter mile, ran 4 miles late. Then I screw it all. I eat an entire bag because I long for an even experience. I long for an even life. I want it so bad. I hate this roller coaster. I go 3 days, 4 days, eating well, doing the right things, and then probably not even 3 or 4 days. Probably 2 days, and then I'm eating very well, and then something happens. I have a terrible thought. I get stressed out, and the only thing able to solve it is a giant bag of Tostitos blue corn chips, or possibly a Hershey bar, or this. So Jack Daniels here, old number 7. Anyway, the even life is not for us, because the even life doesn't give you that incredible, fantastic experience of coming back to the Father and having the party thrown. I want the party. In order to get the party, you know, you have to, I guess, snoot around in the pigsty a little bit. Apparently. I mean, we're all there in some way, shape, or form. So, the Lake of Fire is not a reform school. It's death, and it's called death. Interestingly enough, it's not called death until Revelation 20:14, when the beast, the adversary, and the false prophet are cast there. In Revelation 20:10, it's simply called the Lake of Fire, burning with sulfur and brimstone. Or no, sulfur and fire, I guess it is. Yeah, fire and sulfur, in that order. It's not called the second death until humans are cast there. But I remind you, and this is the glorious thing, that death is the absence of life, and there's no consciousness in death. There's no passage of time in death. Most of the objections to this truth are from people who are operating on an emotional plane. They can't understand why God would send anyone to the lake of fire, which is the second death, if he's raised them and judged them and everything is great. It's not fair. Oh, so if you were God. If I were God, I wouldn't do that. Okay, well, you're not God. So can I explain to you what God does? I don't want to hear it. I'm going to tell you anyway. All right. Do you know any believers who have died the first death? Yes, I do. My friend Charlie Kronk was a believer. He died. Our friend from England recently died. Nelson Cardwell of New Mexico died. I hate it when people die, but when believers die, it's tough. So those of you who would be tempted to complain about why God raises people at the Great White Throne, judges them, apparently makes things right, then consults the Book of Life. Their names are not there, and casts them into the Lake of Fire, which is the second death. Why? Why is that not fair? Why do you have a huge problem with that? But you don't have a problem with the fact, I mean, you have a problem, but you accept it as natural, that those who are justified today, those who are in the body of Christ, justified, conciliated to God, sin not being reckoning to them, they still die. That doesn't seem fair, does it? Why do we die? Well, because we're mortal. Okay. And it's what? It's what? It's not our time to be raised. That's right. Not our time to be raised yet. So we go to sleep. We're not going to. Don't worry. We're the generation who remains alive to the coming of the Lord. But those who die, it's like they're going to sleep. Sleep is like death. And then it's time later when the Lord returns for them to wake up. Okay, just transfer that to the people at the Great White Throne, because those at the Great White Throne whose names are not written in the Book of Life, and that book is consulted, and they're judged according to their acts, according to their works, not according to their faith, because they didn't have faith. Faith is not the issue at the Great White Throne. So they're experiencing there, they are experiencing there what we have experienced here. They're now coming to saving faith at the Great White Throne. They're now getting it. They're getting illuminated. The earth has fled. They're standing there before God. Oops. I guess Zender and those other people were right. Yeah, they were right. Was my name written in the Book of Life? Ooh. Sorry, but your works were wicked. And before they even get the word shit out, they're cast into the lake of fire. Before they even get the word shit out, they've just gotten the first two letters of shit, which is S-H, and they go, osh, and they're cast into the lake of fire. They're cast, not dragged. This is not a Vincent Price movie. No, they're just cast it very quick. And you know what the first, you know, I told you the first thing they're going to say when they wake up out of the lake of fire is, huh, God said, I thought I was going to go to the lake of fire, but God must have changed his mind. No, that's not the first thing they're going to say. The first thing they're going to say is it. The first thing they're going to say is it. Martin, why it? Because it's the last two letters of the word shit. That's why. They're going to find out their names are not written in the Book of Life. They're going to be standing there. Talk about suspense. The Book of Life is consulted, looking for their name. It's like, please, please let my name be in the Book of Life. I did some good works. Did I do enough good works? I hope I did. And then they get the bad news. Talk about a bad diagnosis. Oh, boy. The bad news is, well, we're sorry to have to tell you, your name is not written in the Book of Life. In the Book of Life. And as soon as, they're not even done saying the word shit, and they're in the lake of fire. All they've said is shh, and then the next thing they know, they're raised from the lake of fire, and they go, it. And to them, they said the whole word. To them, it was one smooth shit. You see, one smooth shit. Aw, shit. It was smooth to them. But there was a gap. There was a gap between the S-H and the I-T. And that gap lasted, let's assume, the fifth eon, last 10,000 years. That gap was 10,000 years between the shh and the it. 10,000 years between the shh and the it. And so they say the whole world, the word, to their consciousness. And after that, they look around and they hope nobody heard them cuss. Was it a bad thing to say that word in front of God? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. And then they look around and like, whoo, I feel great. I feel light. What happened? That's when they'll turn to you or to me and they'll say, you know, they consulted the Book of Life about, you know, 10 seconds ago, 5 seconds ago, and my name wasn't there. And I knew I was going to the lake of fire, but I guess God changed his mind. Like, dude, you've been dead for 10,000 years. What? Yeah. You missed the entire fifth eon. We'll show you the highlight reel, but you missed it. They're not going to believe it. They're not going to believe it. So how bad can we really feel for those who go to the lake of fire, which is the second death? They're just not appointed to live during the last eon, but they will live with eternity for God. They'll live for eternity with God. So here's their course. They're born. They live their life, 50, 60, 70 years, whatever. They have all the trials normal humans do with a few perks thrown in, you know, like a little whiskey and Hostess Twinkies and Tostitos blue corn chips and Hershey bars. Then they die. No consciousness in the first death either. So let's say they died of an overdose of Tostitos blue corn chips. They're eating the entire bag, and then they perish. And they wake up and they finish their burp. And they're at the Great White Throne. Oh, I'm sorry. I just ate a bag. Oh, where's my blue chips? I just had them. What? Where am I? Oh, are you God? Yes, I'm God. Okay. I just had a bag of Tostitos blue corn chips. Where are they? Dude, you've been dead for 500 years. Because the dude died in, 1600. I can't do the math that quickly. Forgive me if I'm wrong there. Did they have Tostitos blue corn chips in 1600? Okay. No. All right. I've been informed by my people that they did not have Tostitos blue corn chips in the 1600s. 1700s? Okay, forget that. So, the guy lives his life, dies, wakes up instantly according to his perception, his or her perception. Standing before God, the book of life is consulted. I'm sorry to tell you, boom, lake of fire, second death. Boom, it. And now you're with God for eternity. How is that a bad deal? How, I ask you. If everybody went to the lake of fire, which is the second death, no one would have any complaints. You live a short life, relatively. A lot of trials, but some perks, some nice little treats along the way. You wake up, get judged. The worst thing that happens to you is your name's not written in the book of life. You go to the second death, we just explained how that happens. And next thing you know, you're with God for eternity. How is that a bad deal? And let's say your name is written in the book of life. Well, you hop, skip, and jump like a kangaroo onto the new earth, where you live as a mortal, but your life is renewed every month by the leaves of the tree of life, the fruits and the leaves and all that. Just, it sustains your life. It's like a recharge, like your Tesla car. You plug it in, you get another month of life out of it. Every month, the tree of life produces different fruit. The tree of life is in the New Jerusalem, the center of the city, the city square, town square. It's not a bad deal for anyone. But now we come to us. We, members of the body of Christ, we don't, after the snatching away, we're in. I mean, we're the first ones resurrected, the first ones before Israel, before Peter, James, John, before Abraham, before Moses, before Adam and Eve and Job. We're raised before all these people. And we are the earliest resurrection besides Jesus Christ. We're the earliest resurrected human beings to come to God. It's an amazing privilege. And what do we owe it to? To the grace of God, to being chosen before the disruption of the world. No credit to ourselves. We don't have to worry about the second death. We do have to think about the first death. And it comes to some of us. Nelson Howe is the name of the gentleman from Great Britain. Sorry, I forgot his name. Nelson Howe. A great brother. We watched his videos. What a guy. What a stoic man. What a man of faith in God as he faced death. Just an incredible testimony to his faith, which was given him by God. I understand that, but honor to whom honor is due. So we will see him. So, but us, though, we're not going to die. No death for us. We're going to be snatched away any minute now and be with Christ. So we are privileged among all human beings, even though the rest of the humanity doesn't have any complaints. And like I said, if all humanity went that way, everybody went to the lake of fire, which is the second death, let's say, none of them would have any complaints because they're going to live with eternity for God, all for a few short moments. You live this life, you go to the first death, no consciousness, you wake up at the lake of fire. I mean, you wake up at the great white throne, you wonder what happened, where's my Tostitos? God judges you, it might hurt, it might be kind of rough, and for some people it's like, ow, ooh, okay, yeah, got it. Boom, if your name's not written in the book of life, you die again, boom, next thing you know you're awake, and then you're with God. I mean, you see, those people at the great white throne go through what we're going through now. That's their time of trial. That's their day of reckoning, their hour of reckoning. I don't know how long the great white throne lasts. That's their hour of reckoning. We get our stuff done now, aren't you glad? All the things we have to go through, all the trials we have to experience to fit us for our place, they happen to us now. Better now than later. Better now than later.